People are weird, man. People are weird.
Oh, hi. Hi, I'm Molly Wood.
And I'm Kai Rizdahl. You, of course, are listening to Make Me Smart, where none of us is as smart as all of us. Tech culture, the economy, sometimes actually all of those things at the same time.
Yeah, and some other things, too. Who even knows? It is New Year's Eve, and that's so nice that we get to be on a New Year's Eve date together, all of us. Thank you for deciding to spend your New Year's Eve with us.
That's a little weird.
We're still on break. Isn't every New Year's Eve party just a little awkward? I mean, this might as well be, right?
I have been through, let's see, 56 New Year's Eves. I have been to one good party. Truly.
Yeah.
Truly.
Yeah. Same, yeah. Actually.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And we celebrated at like 6 o'clock. We did like
so that was last year. Greenland. Is that what you're telling me?
It was like a Greenland New Year's.
Yeah. Oh man.
Anyway, we are still on break. I am still wearing my Christmas sweater, but we have a great interview to play for you.
TMI, yo.
I've been wearing it for 2 months, you guys. No, I'm just kidding. After that, though, after you hear this Respin interview, which is one of our favorites from the previous year, we are going to review Kai's 2019 predictions. If you heard last week's show, you know that I had to answer for my insane thoughts about 2019. And now Kai gets to answer. And we can hash out how close to the target he got.
Let me just say, I am confident in my predictive abilities. Let me just say that. Anyway, so this one, before we get to that, we're going to do this. An interview that's really for all y'all who are home from college, hanging out, doing nothing, trying to figure out what you want to do with your lives. And talking about how maybe, you know, going to college isn't always the best thing. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not. Who knows? But there's a lot in higher education that needs to be unpacked.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a question of whether higher education is, in fact, preparing students to get jobs.
Yeah.
Like, in theory, that's the goal. College is supposed to train people to become productive members of society and the economy and all of that, and not let them just like goof off and learn how to not wear shoes. Yeah. Turns out the answer to these questions is pretty complicated. We brought in an expert. I don't know where I went with the shoe thing. I went to a liberal arts school. I feel like there was a lot of barefootedness that I didn't need to see. Maura Reynolds is a senior editor for The Agenda, a policy coverage initiative at Politico. She made us so much smarter about all of this. Here's that interview once again. Last fall, we did an episode on higher education and how the whole college financial process is so confusing. And it really struck a nerve. I mean, people really responded to this episode strongly. We talked about things like the sticker price, which is often squishy, federal loans, scholarships, grants, private loans that offset the cost. And then this whole concept of the stress behind a higher education, which is, will it even be worthwhile? Listener Scott Thorne recently graduated with a master's in architecture from the University of Utah. I would argue that's worth it just because it's so cool to say I'm an architect.
Yep.
Nevertheless, he called us and told us about a recent experience that he had.
Before graduation, a few friends of mine and I were walking to lunch, talking about the salaries we could expect once we graduated and started our professional careers. We landed on a number, and as we got to Panda Express, we saw a sign in the door saying that they were hiring branch managers, and the starting salary with benefits was our number. My question for you is, why does it seem that a college degree doesn't pay out like it's supposed to?
Well, ouch. So look, there's like a zillion and one reasons for that, not all of which I can get into. But the fact is that increasingly in this society, people are worried about college paying off, right? When you have $1.3 trillion, not trillions, but $1.3 trillion in student loans. When you have people, some huge percentage of people who start college not finishing college. All of those things. There is a supply-demand equation and a value and a worth and a getting what your money paid for thing at a higher education these days that is a lot more prevalent than it used to be, I think.
Yes. To that exact question, I would say there's also a long-term versus a short-term. The argument for your degree, aside from getting to say, I'm an architect, which, again, invaluable, Scott, is that the branch manager at Panda Express might get paid that same amount for 10 years. But presumably yours is going to go up. You know, there's sort of like, there's your starting year salary based on your master's in architecture. But then there's what's in theory going to happen in the 10 years that come after and that your growth potential is more. But I think we're asking rightly whether that is still the case in America and whether that degree is going to pay off at all, yeah. let alone down the road. So to help us answer that question and obviously the many other questions it contains, Maura Reynolds is joining us live on the podcast. It was always so exciting. She's been waiting for us to get to her.
Patiently.
Maura is a senior editor at Politico and works on, among other things, a project there called The Agenda, where they gather experts across fields to weigh in on these sort of pressing social issues. The Agenda project recently published a paper called Ladders to Success, Rethinking Education and Skills Training for Tomorrow's Workforce, which I think we can all agree is relevant to this topic. Maura, welcome to Make Me Smart.
Delighted to be with you.
So you guys do this whole, it's like a day-long discussion and panel thing, right, for this paper that you all came up with?
Well, not quite a day, right. but a couple hours, and we get a whole bunch of smart people in a room who have different expertise and different data sets and kind of make them talk to each other and stress test their ideas with each other. And hopefully we come up with some points of consensus, points of disagreement, but that somehow illuminates the issue beyond where we started.
So why this topic now?
Well, we were all year looking at social mobility issues and threats to financial prosperity. You know, we looked at retirement and how Americans aren't saving enough for retirement. We looked at something called the geography of opportunity and how job creation and opportunity isn't spread equally around the United States. And throughout all of that, we kept coming up to this question of whether, you know, people had the education that they need for the jobs that the economy is creating. So we developed this, you know, working group of really smart people, included a number of university chancellors, some high-tech firm recruiters, you know, people who are involved with apprenticeships, scholars, just a real variety of very smart people to sort of debate this issue of whether our education system is actually educating Americans the way we need them to for the economy as it's developing.
So give me takeaways numbers 1, 2, and 3. I mean, what's the biggest thing out of this about education, the current state of the workforce, and the skills it needs to thrive in the not-too-distant future?
Well, I think the biggest takeaway was that even though all of our smart people were from very different backgrounds, some were educators, some were employers, whatever, they all agreed that the education system needs disruption. That was the word that came up, that there is a mismatch, they agreed, between what our economy needs and what our higher education system is producing. How to fix that, that was a little more contentious. One of the things that they did agree on is that increasingly education should be stackable.
I'm sorry, it should be stackable?
Stackable.
Okay.
So in other words, like if you go to a four-year college, then presumably that college is providing all of the courses and they provide the degree. Mm-hmm. And if you need to prove to someone later that you did that education, you have to write away to that college to send you a transcript, right?
Yep.
But what if you decided to not do math at that university and you did an online course in math? Then how could you combine that online course with the rest of your education? And what they're saying is that increasingly you should be able to take a course at a community college or at a specialty institute or, you know, some other place and combine all of those different credentials, sometimes into a degree, sometimes into whatever other skill set that you need in order to get the job going forward. Because the way the world is working now, you know, the degree that you have when you leave college or university is not the sum total of education you are going to need in order to do your job throughout your life. You're going to need retraining.
Hmm. Isn't that, I mean, I would almost call it portability, right? Education portability, that you can take a chunk from here, a chunk from there, move it around. But isn't that what accreditation is supposed to do? Like, how far away is the university system from that already? I mean, there are standards, right, that can be applied across schools.
Yeah. We didn't get into the accreditation piece of it so much, but that raises this question about whether education is going to be focused specifically to job skills and how you measure that and how you verify that the person has that credential versus a traditional education in which you have to do things like, you know, take distribution courses or, you know, study English and everyone has to have 1 year of algebra or whatever it is. There's different models of education. And right now, universities are basically set up to educate young adults right out of high school for their first job with, you know, a 2 year or 4 year degree. What they're not set up to do is educate people later in life to provide as much direct job skills, and they're not that flexible.
All right. So if I am a high school, well, let's make me a junior in high school, right? Because the seniors this year are already cooked. They're already done. But if I'm a junior in high school and I'm reasonably ambitious, my school is fine. I want to go to a 4 year college, but I don't know how to pay for it. And I'm not quite sure what I want to be when I grow up. What do I take away from this working group that you all set up?
That it matters what you study.
Huh.
That the person who wrote in, who was the architect, yeah. Like, was that really the best thing to get a 4 year degree in?
But wait. But that's what I want to be. I want to be an architect. I don't want to be computer programming is not my gig or organic chemistry. I want to be an architect. So I'm going to study architecture. And it can't possibly be that the panel thinks I should study, computer programming if I want to be an architect. That can't be right.
So if you're, though, to get back to your question, a college junior, and you know that you want to study architecture.
High school junior.
Yeah. High school junior, and you know you want to study architecture, and you don't care if you ever make a lot of money, then you should study architecture. But what the working group was saying was right now, if you're a high school junior, you don't actually have information about what jobs are going to be available, what the courses are that you're going to need to do in order to get those jobs. And, you know, it's all sort of a crapshoot. And frankly, it's a really expensive crapshoot for the student. So if you're not really sure what you want to be when you grow up, then you should look at what are the degrees or whatever that have the best employment outcomes. Those are going to tend to be in, you know, computers and technology and whatever. But the lack of information, I think, is the most important thing here.
Yeah.
Like the players in this marketplace, the students, the employers, and the universities don't have enough information about what all the others are doing.
Hmm. It's interesting because in some ways, you know, it seems like the panel determined that education needs disruption. But there's so many other factors that go into this. Like, certainly education can be more outcome-based. That seems very clear, as opposed to, let's say, profit-based.
Yes.
But on some level, it also sounds like you're talking about cultural expectations. Like, you're saying maybe college is not about your pursuit of individual happiness. Like, maybe, I guess all I'm saying is, maybe does education really need to be that disrupted, or does the parenting need to be disrupted, or does the expectation need to be disrupted? Like, a lot of this information is there. It's not perfectly presented, but certainly we know job trends. Like, Kai, don't let your kids study that when they get to college.
Hmm.
Well, one thing to think about and one thing that the group discussed was the emphasis on the BA. So I was a parent of a high school student not too long ago, and the message, you know, that he was constantly getting was, you need to get a BA, you need to get a BA. But, you know, among the people in the working group, they were saying a lot of employers, including some of the employers there, reflexively ask for BAs when, is that really what they want? Do they really want just someone who is capable of learning on the job or being trained, or, you know, what is it that the BA signifies? And that gets to the larger question. You know, we've increased the number of BAs that we're producing, and certainly a lot of the jobs that are being created demand a BA. But is that really the best allocation of the resources? Is that really what employers need or want? And is that really the investment that students need to make? For instance, elsewhere in the issue that we did at the agenda, we interviewed the U.S. CEO of Siemens, and she was saying, yes, there's a huge skills gap that we see every day, but, you know, it's in the middle skills. And you can, as an employer, work with a community college, have somebody earn some college credit, but also actually get the skills that you need them to learn for the job, which is called an apprenticeship, which we don't use in the United States very much. But the employers that we were talking to basically said that it's that middle skills area, that not the total blue-collar job, not the pure white-collar job, that middle skills area is where they need more workers. And our education system isn't really producing that.
Did y'all – you remember that thing back in the Obama administration that went nowhere? Because I think higher ed pushed back. But you remember that thing they were going to do in the education department where they were going to come out with like some score or some grade for each college on how well it delivered on what you paid, right? Whether you were getting your money's worth. Any discussion of that?
Yep. Yes, in fact, they did discuss that.
Yeah.
And the general feeling was that it was a good idea that wasn't, I guess, politically executed as well as it could have been, but that need is certainly there.
Yeah.
That students going into some of these programs and taking on loans or whatever, you know, tens of thousands of dollars, hundreds of thousands of dollars in some case, need to know whether they're going to get a job at the end of it. And they don't know that right now.
Mm-hmm.
But is it fair to say that there would be university pushback? I have a hard time believing that, you know, a very strong system of accountability and those kinds of outcome-based metrics wouldn't be resisted by a university system. Like, what is the incentive for the higher ed industry, shall we say, to adopt those kinds of metrics, knowing that the emperor might turn out to not have any clothes?
Well, I mean, I completely understand that because ultimately they're not giving the student the job, right? It's an employer that's doing that.
Right.
And one of the missing pieces in so much of the discussion about higher ed is where are the employers? You know, there is not enough information out there for universities and for students to know how they should be educating themselves for the jobs that might be available in another 2 or 4 years. But the risk right now is sort of more on the students and on the providers of the education and somewhat less on the employers who sort of say, okay, we don't have the people that we want to hire. The other thing is on-the-job training. I mean, there's been a general sense, although the numbers are hard to come by, a general sense that employers are not doing the kind of on-the-job training now that they did a generation ago. And, you know, people change jobs more often. So if an employer spends a lot of time and money educating an employee who then takes those skills and moves on to a competitor, you can understand how there's a disincentive to do a lot of on-the-job training. But that actually is the way a lot of the middle skills people got trained during the industrial era. And is there some kind of a new system that could be developed now where employers are incentivized to either help workers get trained, participate in apprenticeships, do something else, but be a part of the equation instead of, you know, basically being a sort of passive recipient saying we're not getting the workers that we need.
Mm-hmm. So last thing, Maura, and then I'll let you go. That high school junior you were talking about parenting not too many years ago, what did you do with him or her? Where what road was chosen?
No pressure, Maura.
Funny you should ask, but he decided not to go to college.
Oh, wow.
And is
the plot thickens.
Gainfully employed.
Really?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Fascinating. Yep. What a perfect way to end this conversation.
That's a great end.
Maura Reynolds, thanks so much for coming on.
Maura, really appreciate it.
Pleasure to be with you.
So let me say, as a guy with 2 college kids home this New Year's break, it's really interesting to see what they're going to do. One's a senior graduating in 6 months, and I'm like, hello,
really?
What are you doing? Yeah.
I mean, is there any sign of job on the horizon? Like, what
he's doing the internship thing now, hoping it'll pay off later. You know, I don't know. I mean, I'm not going to ride him, but it's on my mind. And then the other one's a freshman, and he's like, what? Huh?
Could be anything.
Fine. Yeah.
I got to say, that whole conversation made me once again very grateful that I ended up with a journalism major because it's basically a vo-tech.
Right.
Like there's some argument that's just, you know, like what you learn in journalism school, not when you're getting a master's in journalism, that's just a waste of time.
Oh, I agree. Concur. Totally.
How to do the job.
Yeah.
And then when I went to apply for things, they were like, great, you already know how. I mean, I had that job. Like, I don't even realize or would never have realized what a favor I was doing my mother. Like, I had my first job with the Associated Press lined up in January of my senior year.
Wow.
It was like, off you go. Vo-tech. Boom, boom.
Yeah.
I know. You're welcome, Mom.
Yep. Yeah, for sure. For sure.
All right, anyway. We'll be back in a minute. Yep. I feel like Kai got a little awkward there because he just imagined all his kids moving back home after college. Just like,
they won't.
It would be fun.
Yeah, for about an hour.
Okay, be back in a minute on the other side of the break where we will put Kai Risnall on the spot and see if he was right about 2019. Stay with us.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more. Wondery means business.
We're back. And since it is the end of the year, the end of the decade, panic attack.
I'm over that.
Yeah. Decade.
That was a dumb meme. That was a dumb meme that went around like a month ago, whatever. The whole end of the decade thing. I think that's ridiculous. Let's all do
it. Oh, I didn't even, I missed it. Well, where was my kid? He's fallen down on the job.
Because he's barely more than a decade old.
I know. You know what he told me, actually? He's like, you know, our generation is going to end. And I'm like, that sounds more apocalyptic than you mean it to. And then B, I don't think that's actually
that's
what's
good.
Gonna
now go
happen.
Clean your room.
Yeah. Also, can you just bring in the trash cans
that's
for
right.
once?
That's right.
I know that one of the things that you are doing on New Year's Eve, if you're anything like me, is sitting around making last minute donations.
Yep.
And this is your chance, your last chance to become a marketplace investor in the 20 teens. I mean, this is it. Wow. That is momentous. And the place to do that last minute donation is marketplace.org/donate.
We do this show because, well, first of all, because we like it and we have a good time doing this. But also we are able to do it because of you. More than any other thing that I think Marketplace does, this podcast is a collective effort between us and you. And we simply cannot do it without your expertise and your thoughts and your comments and also, frankly, your support. And now is as good a time as any to donate because tax deductions. That's all I'm saying.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
That's all I'm saying.
And don't make them take our candy away. This is like our favorite thing that we do.
Yeah. It's a little bright spot. Otherwise, no.
It really is every single week. Yes. We need you. Thank you. So, thank you in advance, and thank you for all you have done throughout 2019, because it's been real and noticeable and felt around the office every day.
Marketplace.org/donate, and I promise you won't hear me say it again for the rest of the decade. How about that?
Oh, my God. I'm going to just start making that joke constantly now. I'm talking about everything. For the last time this decade, bring the trash cans in. 2020 approaches.
Right.
But first, let's look back to 1 year ago in the final days of 2018 when Kai went into his special dark place like he does and made his fateful prediction about what was to come in the new year.
Okay, here's mine. And you will be underwhelmed. And it's, I am shock. Spoiler alert. I'm not as thoughtful as Molly about all these things. Here's what I think. And it's a little bit dark placey. I actually don't think anything's going to change in 2019. I don't think anything's going to change politically, right? President's not going to be impeached. Democrats in Congress will not upend any kind of order, although there will be much sound and fury. Consumers will not be smarter about their data. And companies like, oh, Facebook are not going to be any more cognizant of their responsibilities. I think the economy, frankly, is not going to change. I think it's going to keep bumping along the muddy bottom. Yes, the economy is good now, but it's going to slow down. And then I think it's just going to stay slowed down. And I just think everything's going to be the same. I think we're living a little bit of Groundhog Day. Truly, I do. All right, hang on. I got to back away from the microphone for this because otherwise the engineers will yell at me. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
Boom! Boom.
I mean, except for one.
What?
Kind of large, starts with an I aspect.
So, first of all, I don't believe that that's going to happen before the end of the year, right?
Even articles?
Yeah, even articles.
This is the part. We should say full disclosure, you guys. You're hearing this on New Year's Eve, but we're recording it in November. Yes. So we don't know yet whether articles have been drafted. But you don't think even that's going to happen before the end of the year?
Well, all right. That might happen before the end of the year. But you know, clearly, obviously, as we all know, he's not going to be removed. But look, I'm completely – we should just replay that whole thing from my 2020 predictions. That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying.
Also, I'm just saying, I knew you were going to do that too.
No, you're right. So look.
But
so,
what does change look like in your mind? Because isn't change almost never? So, it's like a slowly at first and then really quick.
Yeah. So look, you go specifics and I go broad and thematic here. And here's what change looks like for me. Change looks like a freshening of the national dialogue, an agreement on mutual interests. Discussions of things of strategic import, whether that's technology or the economy or things in our culture. We are not having the same conversation in this country. The two sides, and yes, I'm speaking in really broad generalities here, right? But we are literally talking past each other, okay? If you watched any of the House hearings, you saw that happening. If you watch mainstream media, if you watch Fox News and then MSNBC, we are talking past each other. And I think, frankly, that that's enormously discouraging. It fills me with some sense of despair, and I don't know what it will take to make a conversation happen where we are actually talking to each other instead of past each other.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't want to go even darker place.
Okay.
But as a student of history, mm-hmm. riddle me this, like when has that ever happened? Or has it ever happened but for in the aftermath of something extremely terrible?
That's exactly right, right? And we're not in the aftermath of anything yet. We're still in the middle of it, right? And look, let's remember, go ahead, what?
You know my argument that 2016 was a revolution. That election represented a large, like in the history books, that is going to be a hard left.
Yeah.
That was a turn.
Yeah, it was actually a hard right, but yeah.
Hard right. But you know what I mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, like I'm trying to not be so partisan, man.
No, I hear you. But
it was
look,
a divergence from a path.
Yes, absolutely. And the question is, are we through that disruption to the point where we can actually have a conversation about the path forward? And mm-hmm. I don't believe we're through it yet. And look, we have to remember that 63 million people voted for the current state of affairs. We have to remember that. And we're going to have an opportunity a year from now. And let's remember we're recording this in November, right? We're going to have an opportunity a year from now to have some kind of national consensus or disconsensus, if you will, on whether this period ought to continue. And I don't believe that substantively 2020 will bring a change unless and until we get to Election Day. Look,
so.
I should actually come clear here, right?
But knowing that there is an election, it feels like you can't totally predict that 2020 will be the same in terms of no change.
No, but what day is Election Day? Election Day, I think, is November 3rd, right?
So November,
whatever it is. The day after Election Day, we should actually pop into the studio and do a quickie. But I do feel like I need to come clean here for a second. Many of you may know that I am a Navy veteran. And it was the foundational experience of my life. And I am distressed beyond measure about this whole Eddie Gallagher thing, about the way that has played out, about the president's role, about the Secretary of Defense's role, about Secretary of the Navy's role. I should also say here, full disclosure, that I was on the Navy staff 25, 28 years ago with Colin Green, who's now a two-star admiral in charge of the Navy SEALs and who's wrapped up in this. I just – so my current – and yes, we all know I go to the dark place a lot. But I, that my current state of predictions is greatly colored by that, and I apologize for letting that affect me. But that's where I am.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Happy New Year.
On Twitter. I know. I will say I have wanted to give you a hug. Like, you can just see how rightfully upsetting this is.
Yeah.
Yep. Anyway, I feel
right.
you.
So anyway,
I'm just going to hope
Enough
for better
yeah.
in 2020. Yeah. Like the dumb puppy that I am.
All right. We have a new puppy. She's a golden retriever. She's fun. She likes it when I give her hugs.
I know. I mean, so she, nice. Right? Like, just like channel. Just see if you can osmosis some of the... She's such a little teenager, too. She's so, like, lanky.
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah, when you're in Kai's excellent portraits. All right, that's it All for right, us. Remember, we're just going to go play with dogs because that is always a pick-me-up. We're doing our predictions a little differently this year. So if you missed last week's episode, the Christmas Eve episode, you can hear my predictions. Next week, we will hear from all of you,
so
which I'm excited about.
Don't blow it. That's all I'm saying.
Don't blow it. No pressure.
Look, have a happy new year, everybody. Maybe start the year off fresh by signing up for our newsletter. Lands in your inbox every Friday morning. Covers some of the highlights of the week. Great recommendations from you and from the folks here at Marketplace. Marketplace.org/newsletters to sign up. Check it out. It's actually really good. It's really good.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Yep.
Super fun. Quick read, too. Because that's what
that
it's all about.
In 2019.
Quick read.
It's new. That was new. Make me smart. Is produced and directed by Sam Anderson. Our digital producer is Tony Wagner. Our senior producer is Jody Becker. Thank you to Ben Hethcote, our video producer, and Erica Phillips, who writes the newsletter and our Rockstar skill.
Are you? I went to see
Never
Frozen
not.
2 the other day, and they're doing the origin story
really?
Of Scooby-Doo.
What?
It's a whole lot of
really?
Yeah, seriously. It's either brilliant or terrible. I can't decide. Anyway,
okay.
Daniel Ramirez, who has children of an age to go see the new Scooby-Doo movie, will probably have to do that. Theme music was composed by Ben Talladay and Daniel Ramirez. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves. The senior vice president and general manager is Deborah Clark.
Happy New Year! My man friend is fond of saying that if YouTube had existed when he had been a teenager, he would not have survived because of the, like, instigation to be more and more extreme, you know? He's yeah, I mean, we were already, like, trying to blow up cars.
Yep.
And
yep.
imagine if YouTube had been there and we'd be like, what if we added plutonium to the car bomb?
For sure.
You know, yeah.
For sure.
Yep.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.